Well, good morning to everyone. Certainly is a pleasure to be back in Fort Wayne. Mr. Bornhorst said enough time had passed where the damage was done and you had forgotten what I said last time. So he said, I think it's all right. Go back up there and try it again. So it has been, we were trying to figure it on the way up. It's been at least 2 years. So it doesn't mean you're out of sight, but not necessarily out of mind. So we think of you often, and I will say Mr. Bornhorst does an excellent job of keeping us well connected to the Fort Wayne Church in terms of updates, our prayer requests, and we feel very, very connected to you. So, but it is good to be back. I think this is new here as well. So I love what you've done with the place. It's neat to see that as well, and to be back here with you this morning. We sat on this side because we wanted to feel younger over here, but the ushers said we got to move over here during the sermon, I think, right? But anyways, it's a great Sabbath, especially when you have U2 mentioned in the sermonette. I said, Street with No Names. I'm like, that's a U2 song, right? I'm thinking that maybe I'm just, and he went through it. So I appreciated that. That was an excellent start to the Sabbath and speaking about heaven and God's kingdom. Well, it reminded me of something I had heard this week about a taxi cab driver and a priest who had died. And forgive the stretch on theology here just for a moment, but they died and went to heaven. And when they went up there, they hopped on a bus with St. Peter, and he went down one of these roads, and he came to this huge mansion, huge, lovely mansion with a big pool and well landscaped and manicured, and that's where he dropped off the taxi cab driver. And they proceeded down a couple more side streets and roads, and they came to this real small cabin with a couple bunk beds, and that's where he dropped off the priest. And the priest said, well, hold on a second, I don't understand. I've been serving you my whole life, giving sermons, doing all these things. Why do I get this little small house and the taxi cab driver gets the big house? And he said, well, when you were giving sermons, people were sleeping. When he was driving, people were praying. So I guess the lesson is you really don't know what work we're doing really at the end of the day, right? Your work may be changing lives more than a sermon. So hopefully you don't sleep through the entirety of it, but I thought that was a good reminder as well. This morning I'd like to ask you a question. Simple question, but something to think about. When you think about your lives, what is one of your greatest fears? One of your greatest fears in life? It could be fear of a long sermon, right? Understandable for all of us. It could be loneliness. You look at a list, if you want to go Google online, you look at top fears, you'll find things like loneliness. How about snakes or insects? Right? It's probably up there for a lot of people. I see some people. How about for our young people when they pass out that exam and you look at it for the first time and wondered if you studied enough, right? That fear of, did I study enough for this test? Fear of maybe death. Fear of the afterlife. Fear of your finances, right? Will I make it? Do I have enough money? Am I going to be okay? A number of things that drive fears. If you look in Webster's dictionary, one of the things it talks about for fear is an unpleasant, often strong emotion caused by anticipation or awareness of danger. Right? We could go around the room today and I hear some people say, I don't have any fears. I'm like, I'm not that person. I'd love to meet that person, right? No fears in the world. But unfortunately, for most of us, we have some level of fear, some level of anxiety that might grip us at times. And you think about that on a human level, and those are things we'll probably deal with for most of our lives on one sort, and hopefully you can overcome some of those things. But then we start thinking about who we are spiritually. And the Bible says something pretty profound when you go back to Revelation. Go back to Revelation, the 21st chapter. Let's read something here as we start this message. Revelation 21, fear of public speaking often is listed at even higher than the fear of death, right? So Revelation 21 and verse 7, it says, he who overcomes shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son. That's a wonderful promise that we all hold on to and hold near and dear. But verse 8 says, but the cowardly, or in many translations, the fearful, the unbelieving, the abominable murderers, sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. So it says, first listed on this list of those who are excluded, they're fearful. Fearful will not be in God's kingdom. Now, this is not talking about, I'm afraid I'm going to disappoint God, I'm afraid I'm going to sin, or I have a fear of God, I hold him in awe and reverence. No, it's more of a fear to act boldly in our beliefs. More of a fear to say that I believe in Jesus Christ. More of a fearful, maybe there will be persecution, and I'm fearful of what men might do to me. It's that kind of fear or cowardice that's being talked about here. So I'm talking about the fears we have humanly, but and we all have different fears there, but this is a real serious one spiritually. And I want our young people to think about this as well, because I'm going to give you an example from the Bible this morning, almost this afternoon, that gives an example of a person that's much younger, closer in age to you than it is to most of us here, a person in the Bible that was quite fearful. But through a very interesting process, God took him from fearful to faithful. So those of you who like titles, you can call that, from fearful to faithful. And I think as we look at this verse and we read it with the sobriety that it deserves, we need to look at that first part where it says, those who are fearful, those who are afraid to stand behind or with me, be afraid to stand for Jesus Christ and his gospel and all the things in this lifetime it requires us to do if we truly are to say we are your disciple. That's what's being talked about. And I think about the young people as you are molding and you're going to camp and you're sitting in church, you're beginning that walk on that path too, to go from sometimes a fearful, but hopefully to a faithful journey as you grow in faith. So today I want to talk about someone who you find in Hebrews 11, which I call the spiritual, right, hall of fame for faith. Those who are included there, what a select few, could you imagine? And that, you know, that was just for that time. There's a Hebrews 11a, I think, that's still written for people today that are faithful, right? Because God says he has a book of life. There are people sitting here today, I'm sure, that God would view as faithful to him. What a great group that we want to be a part of. We want to move, if we have that fearful side of not knowing if we can fully sign up for God and what he wants from us, to really say that, God, I am yours. I'm your servant. I want to serve you, even when it's pretty scary at times. We're going to see some pretty scary things in the story I'm going to share with you this morning. But isn't that the whole process, right? Where God takes us from that spot and says, your reliance on yourself and what you think is the answer, you start to realize as you go through it, it's not the answer. And you leave that and you start becoming a person that looks more to God, that looks to trust in God, that looks to walk with God, especially in those times when it's really scary and it's easy to run and have your own thoughts, your own feelings, your own answers, your own solutions. Be where you turn. So does anyone know who I might be talking about, who's found in Hebrews 11, who was a judge of Israel, whose name is spelled G-I-D-E-O-N? Anyone think who I might be talking about? Oh, I think I gave it away. I'm sorry. Yes, I want to spend a few minutes this morning on Gideon. Now, you probably have heard the story of Gideon, but I think like all accounts in the Bible, when you just look at it through a different lens sometimes and start looking at his life under this umbrella, from fearful to faithful, it's a pretty interesting story. It's a pretty remarkable thing, but I would say in many ways Gideon was no different than any of the young people sitting here or anyone else sitting here today as well. But he's found in Hebrews 11. So I hope we all find that to be encouraging, because God took him from a spot where he was and took him to a very, very powerful spot of faith. So let's start out this morning by looking and turning, if you would, back to Judges 6. I appreciate the comment by Mr. Herman in the sermonette, because he hit upon this time period that we're talking about, this time period of the judges. So even though you guys are out for the summer for school, I'll give you a couple notes here like you're in class, right? The period of the judges was about 300 years. There were 12 judges, and Gideon was the fifth of those judges. And it was a difficult time, and Mr. Herman alluded to it. It was a period of Israel would get into trouble. They would sin. God would bring some sort of punishment. They would cry out to God, God, stop that, we're so sorry. And then God would relent. And then you repeat, almost like the shampoo cycle. There was no rinse here, but it was certainly a repeat. Right? And we saw that basically throughout the 300 years of this time of the judges. Israel finally, you know, ebbing and moving away. And we look at that sometimes, we go, well, that was just, well, how were they were just, that was horrible, they did that. But as we heard as well, it's easy for us sometimes to run that cycle as well, isn't it? But that's a whole different side point versus what I'm speaking about this morning. So when we happen upon, the stage opens up, and if you want to talk about Gideon, it happens, if the stage were to open up, the latest cycle they were in, they were being punished by God, by the Midianites. The Midianites were like the school bully, right? The school bully that takes your lunch money every day, they're waiting for you when you show up at school. But enough about my seventh grade. All right, I don't want to devolve there, all right? Painful. But that's what the situation was. The Midianites had taken, they would come and they ransacked. Any food, any crops that were grown, they just pillaged Israel. Israel was in a spot where they were just really, really in a deep and dark spot. So go to Judges 6. Stage opens up, like I said. If we were at the play, this is what it would look like in Judges 6, verse 11. Judges 6, verse 11. It says, the angel of the Lord came, and he sat by the tree, which was in Ophrah, which belonged to Joash, while his son Gideon threshed wheat in the winepress in order to hide it from the Midianites. Now, I'm not a farmer, but I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express, and you normally thresh wheat in an open field. That's where it's done. But he was hiding here so they would get some little bit of food that the Midianites couldn't steal. Just something that he could eat for probably himself and his family. And the angel of the Lord in verse 12 appeared to him and said to him, the Lord is with you, you mighty man of valor. Now, could you imagine Gideon? He's sort of huddled in the corner. He's trying to survive and hope no one's going to disturb him so he can eat a meal in peace. And this angel shows and says, I found my mighty man of valor, right? Hold that comment. What does Gideon say back to him? They're in this deep, dark spot. Oh, my Lord, in verse 13, if the Lord is with us, why then has all this happened to us? And where are all his miracles which our father told us about? Did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt? But now the Lord has forsaken us and delivered us in the hands of the Midianites. If all this is true, where is God? God is nowhere in this. Can't you look around and see what's happened? Our fathers spoke of this wonderful time when this God brought our people across the Red Sea. Where are our miracles? Right? Can't you feel that coming from Gideon at this point? He's probably discouraged. He's probably a little bit cynical. He's certainly fearful. He's not believing. Right? So when we go from fearful to faithful, he's got a lot of emotions that Gideon is dealing with in this situation. This is the starting point of where the angel of God finds him. In verse 14, the Lord turned to him and said, go in this might of yours, and you shall save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. In verse 15, Gideon comes back and says, how can I save Israel? We're the weakest clan in Manasseh, and I am the least in my father's house. Isn't that sort of, I mean, another side note? I think the Bible, when you even have certain topics, there's always these little side notes you pick up. It's almost ironic. God must have a great sense of humor. He always plucks out the one that people don't look to, or even that person can't understand it. Wasn't that with Moses? Wasn't that with David? Wasn't that with Solomon? Wasn't that with us? Same, all the way through history, that God uses that. So I won't read it in the entirety, but the rest of the next 8 or 10 verses, Gideon says, okay, this is pretty neat. Maybe let me go and stay right here, he says in the next verse. I want to go get a sacrifice and bring it back. And I think it's funny again because I find humor sometimes. The angel of the Lord said in verse 18 at the latter part of the verse, he says, I will wait till you come back. You can just imagine, I'll be here, I'll wait, because this is part of the process. This is going to work a certain way. So Gideon goes and gets a young goat, and then in verse 21, the angel of the Lord set fire and consumed the meat and the unleavened bread, and Gideon perceived in verse 22 that he was the angel of the Lord. So Gideon said, for I have seen the angel of the Lord face to face. Then the Lord said to him, "Peace be with you. Do not fear. You shall not die." And it's interesting, one of the things you realize too when we talk about this fear to faithful. How is it when you're fearful? You feel what? A lot of anxiety? Anyone been in that spot where you have a lot of fear? Anxiety, unrest, hard to sleep. He says, peace. We're going to see how this peace starts to come over the top when God is involved, when God's presence is there. This is what the angel is trying to tell him. Have peace. I am with you. Right? Now that could be the end of the story now, right? Gideon's faith is full because he saw the angel of the God, angel of the Lord. He saw an unbelievable miracle. He heard comforting words. He should be ready to go, and that's it. And the story, that's why he's in chapter 11 of Hebrews. Right? But there's more to the Gideon story. Now we'll find in the next couple of verses, understand the culture too. I want to just take a step back. The culture of the time was Israel was being oppressed by Midian. Their faith as a people was greatly diminished. You'll see the culture here in a second. The culture was not God worship, it was Baal worship. Imagine a society where there were altars and statues and replicas worshiping Baal. There was not God to be found. That was the culture now. When this angel comes to Gideon, he's introducing something that was a forgotten concept, God, that God was there, that God is to be looked to. Right? Not too dissimilar as we think about our society today. It's easy to look at the gods around us and find safety and security there. It's easy sometimes to forget the real God. Right, that's a starting point. When we're at that spot of God building faith, we have to come to understand and believe and know who God is, who the sovereignty of God is and who he is and what he can do. Then God, we'll find as we go through this faith process, it's not just an intellectual thing where we say, we know what? Okay, we know God is sovereign. He's all great and he's all knowing. End of sermon. No, we know in faith, when God is building faith, what does he ask us to do? He asks us to move, to act, to move with him, to do something. What did God say to Peter, right? Come to me. Walk on the water. What did he say to the disciples? Follow me. Right? There's always that peace now. You start to see, okay, God is great for our young people as well. What are you going to do now? How are you going to walk? How are you going to take those first teetering steps when it's fearful and it's hard to start following God? That's what God asked of Gideon. Look at the next part. So now we would go to a different stage or moving all the stuff around on the stage. The next piece, what happens? What is asked of Gideon by God? So Gideon, because all this happened, he built an altar to the Lord. And now in verse 25, it came to pass the same night that the Lord said to him, okay, now you've got an understanding that I exist, take your father's young bull and second bull of 7 years and tear down the altar of Baal that your father has and cut down the wooden image that's beside it and build an altar to the Lord your God on top of this rock. In the proper arrangement, take the second bull and offer a burnt sacrifice of the wood image which you shall cut down. So Gideon took 10 men from among his servants and did as the Lord said to him. But because he feared his father's household and the men of the city too much to do it by day, he did it by night. God is saying, you need to destroy and abolish what's being worshipped around you. And you need to set up an altar that is for me. Wow. Isn't that quite a task that he's being asked right out of the gate? God's saying, you got to take some steps and come with me. Now you can understand he did this at night. I would understand that. You don't want to do this in broad daylight. This is the whole worship system. These are the people who are worshiping these gods and these statues in Baal. And he's basically going to destroy that. So he did that at night, probably because of fear, it says, for fear of men of the city. But faith is a process, right? Faith is baby steps. And God works, thankfully, God is merciful and usually works us along a path of baby steps as he builds our faith in him. So Gideon does this. What happens the next day? Well, the next day, people are going to realize something's different when they come up and wake up in the morning. There used to be something over here, wasn't there? Yeah, it's all gone now, right? The altar is gone. So the men of the city, in verse 28, arose and saw that the altar was torn down, the wooden image. And they said to one another in verse 29, who has done this thing? And they said, Gideon, the son of Joash, and the men of the city said, bring out your son that he may die because he has torn down the altar. And they wanted to kill him. And Gideon's father said in verse 31, would you plead for Baal? Let the one who would plead for him be put to death by morning. If he is a god, let him plead for himself because his altar has been torn down. Isn't it interesting that his dad now sort of flipped script and defended his son and turned against the face of an angry crowd that was previously defending Baal and Baal worship? So again, sometimes through your actions, you may not realize that when you step out in faith, it helps others. Another little side note, not really my main point, but his father quickly was defending his son and said, let Baal, if Baal's that great God, let him defend himself. So sometimes when you step out in faith, it helps others as well to step out in faith. So again, now Gideon's done all he's had to do, right? He's done, he's full of faith. It's great. But if you remember what God said, what did the angel of the Lord say when he came to him? What was his task that he gave Gideon? He said, I'm going to save you from Israel from the Midianites by your hand. Right? This is a precursor yet. We haven't got to the main event. So Gideon realizes this is building up to this. And we all know the story of the fleece with Gideon, right? And I think it's a great story with Gideon because we have this like back and forth sort of ping pong kind of thing with God where he steps out, he sees this, and he goes, wow, okay, we lived through that. Now it's time. Look what he says in verse 30. In verse 36, what does Gideon now ask of God? God, I've seen a lot. You burned this sacrifice on the fire. That was great. I didn't die when I tore down the altar for you. In verse 36, but if you will save Israel by my hand, as you have said, look, God, how about we do this? I want to see this. I want to put a piece of wool on the threshing floor. If there's dew on the fleece only and dry in the ground, then I'll know. I'll really know then, God. Trust me. Then I'm really going to be comfortable. Then I'll do what you want. So it says in verse 38, and so it was. The next morning, he rose and he squeezed out the fleece and he wrung out the dew out of the fleece. But then Gideon, verse 39, says, you know, God, don't be angry with me. You know, I said that was going to be enough, but you know what? If you could just do it the other way, right? Just do it the other way. That was pretty cool what happened that way, but I'll really know it's you if you do it the other way tonight, right? And sometimes it's you can look at that and say, why doesn't he believe? He's seen so much. Why don't we believe? We've seen so much. Faith, it's a process. It takes time. We waver. And I think it'd be interesting if we all had a meter, like a faith meter. Doesn't it, you know, it's like your gas tank, you know, empty to full. And sometimes it goes back and forth. It goes back and forth because it's a process. And God is merciful through that process. So we get to chapter 7. Now we're to the main event. We've had intermission. We come back. Now the main event is about to take place because now it's time to face the Midianites. It is time to do the task that God has really asked Gideon to perform. You know, when he comes to battle, and you'll read now, look what he's up against in verse 12 of chapter 7. The Midianites and the Amalekites, all the people of the east were lying in the valley so as numerous as locusts, and the camels were without number as the sea by the seashore. I don't know if that, to me, would be just a staggering scene. Men of war, as far as you can see, waiting. We've gone back in Indianapolis. They have Counter Prairie, and they do Civil War reenactments, and you'll see some of that, and it's even seeing that with a smaller group and hearing gunshots and that, it makes your blood stop, let alone an army as great as this. And we can do some math if you go to, again, see, now we got to get some math in because I don't want you guys to forget math, okay? So go to the 8th chapter, and we can find out how innumerable this number was. Because after the skirmish, I'm going to tell you the ending here, Gideon and his army win. So after the skirmish is over, or the war is over, in verse 10, it says, now Zeba and Zalmunna were at Karkor, and their armies with them, about 15,000, all who were left of all the army of the people of the east that we just read about, for 120,000 men who drew the sword had fallen. So 15,000 left, 120 died. How many total men did we start with? Oh, man, school can't start soon enough. All right, 135,000 men. Closest I've seen, like at the Indy 500, they have crowds at upwards of 150 to 200. It is a vast. And these people aren't trying to start a war. Maybe they're drinking a little bit too much, but they're not trying to kill anybody. That's a big, big difference, right? So if you have that situation, it has to be more than just daunting, right? So 135,000 men. Gideon has his huge army gathered. It's 32,000 men. So right off the bat, it's 4-1. Even in hand-to-hand combat, 4-1, I don't like those odds. No. I want 4-1 our side, but not the other way. And God says, no, wait, you know what? That's too huge, right? Now faith, right? Now we're like in that video game where it's the next level, and it's like, hey, you pass level 1, level 2, now we're going up like, and we're getting the sound effects to go with the video game, which is good. So it goes to like level 3 and level 4, right? And we're getting into that, you know, haven't been to this level before. And God says, no, it's too many. So he goes, and you can read it in chapter 7. He goes, okay, Gideon, tell the men who are really, really afraid they can go home. And I always think of myself and put myself in the stories of the Bible. I think it's fun to do that sometimes and saying, if I was there, would I have just like, whoop, there was my hall pass, I'm out, right? You know, you wonder at that time when you look down and you see that, this, you know, your life, right? Faith. Trusting God, 22,000 left. Two-thirds, 2 out of 3 men go. Not surprising. God says, no. Too big with 10,000 still. Isn't it scary sometimes when we talk about faith and where we've been and some of the trials? I know from the prayer requests that I see here and the difficult things and where we're asked, what we heard in the sermonette, to keep walking, keep trusting, keep going. That's what fearful the faithful is about. And God says, you know the story, take them down to the water, and the ones who cup water and look up, those are the ones you keep. And what was that? 300 men. How could that be? 300 against 135,000, that's 450-1. Doesn't make any sense humanly. I mean, we just got through with the college application process this past year, and you look at some of the application rates, you know, they're pretty low. If we had one that said it was 450-1, I'd say rip that one up. We're not trying that one. Those odds just don't work at all on any front, right? 450-1. He took his army from 32,000 to 300, less than 1%. You know, I would be taking roll call if I had 300, make sure everyone is there. We can't even have 299 now. We got to make sure no one else is here. Roll call. Do we have all 300? And what do you say to these guys? Guys, you know what? I don't know what you say at that point. There's no locker room speech at this point. We're going to be faster than they are. Don't worry, we're going to surprise. What are you going to do at this point, right? But this is where God, when God strips us down and he says, where is your trust? What a powerful situation. Where are you looking at this point? I think at that point you got to have everything with God now at this point. There's nothing humanly that's going to tell you this is going to work out. So the night before the battle, what happens? Gideon's what? Concerned, nervous. Look what it says in chapter 7. Chapter 7 and verse 9. At the end of verse 8, the camp of Midian was below him in the valley. And it happened on the same night the Lord said to him, arise and go down against the camp. Okay? For I have delivered it into your hand. Don't we have all the promises of God that we read daily, weekly, the feast? They're all there. Right? Just go with faith. Do all that. Easier said than done. What does God say? But if you're afraid to go down, interesting, God realizing again, if you're afraid, go down to the camp with Pura, your servant, and you will hear what they will say. And so he allowed them to go down. We'll come back to this piece, but a couple soldiers were talking and they had a dream and that they were going to lose to Gideon. God again giving another reassurance to Gideon that he was there, that he was going to win the battle. It wasn't you and your 300 men and your torches and your lamps. That wasn't going to be the answer. God was going to deliver them. It's a remarkable story of God taking a man that was huddled in the fetal position trying to eat food to lead an army of 300 men to defeat the Midianites. It's an incredible story, but that's the Bible, right? That was just a story that has no bearing for us. I think it has great bearing for us because God took and used someone very similar, I think, to many of us in this room and took him onto a very, very faithful journey. So today, at the end of my sermon, I want to give you just five takeaways. Five takeaways from this lesson that hopefully you can have, that I can have, that we can remember as we meet those spots as Gideon did, that we can continue during those tough, scary times to grow in faith, to be a person that's found who's overcome, as it says in Revelation 21 and verse 7, that's a faithful servant of God, that's all in and says, God, I look to you entirely. What a bar. I trust in you completely when humanly everything else tells us to run the other way. First thing I would mention to you, that God knows who we are, even if sometimes we forget. God knows who we are. Let me explain what I mean. Go back to the story of Gideon. Judges 6. When the angel of the Lord first came to him in verse 12, how did he address him? He says, "The Lord is with you, you mighty man of valor." God saw him very different than Gideon saw himself. I don't find there was any kind of, this wasn't like a joke, he wasn't trying to belittle him. This is, you mighty man of valor. He says it even later in verse 14, "Go in this might of yours." Isn't it great how God thinks of us, how God views us when sometimes we're in that spot of fear and uncertainty? And I think about how God might address us, you mighty overcomer. Wouldn't it be great when you think about how God would say that to us? Go forward today, you mighty overcomer. And you say, I'm having a hard, difficult time overcoming. How could you choose me? I'm the least of those who have overcome, right? But that's how God starts to think of us. You mighty endurer, you who have gone through so much, have been so faithful for so long, come with me and I will give you complete victory. We could turn to so many verses where God talks of us in that way. It's good to know that God thinks of us a certain way, even though sometimes in our fear we forget that. I'll just go to one verse. Like I said, there's so many that we could read under this point, but Ephesians 2 and verse 10. One of my favorite verses when you read everything that's packed into this verse. Ephesians 2 in verse 10. I know now with sign language, I was talking to Barb beforehand. If I'm going too fast, you rub your arm here, right? So if you need to rub your arm, if I'm going too fast, let me know. I get excited. No? Okay? Okay. Yeah, you just go like this, and then I'll think you have an itchy arm, and I'll get her. The other way? Okay, sorry. Okay. Slow. Go slower? Okay. Okay. So I'm pausing here for a minute, but okay. Ephesians 2. In verse 10, it says, "For we are his workmanship." We know that God's created us, but it's great to say we are his workmanship created in Jesus Christ for good works. And that sounds like, I don't know if I understand the full intent of this verse, but it says, "Which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them." You know, for created for good works that God prepared beforehand. That I think of that individually, that God has each for each one of us works that he wants us to do for his glory. Because he created us that way. And he says, you know what, this person, I did this, so they're going to do this. They're going to do this. They're going to do this. I have that vision. Isn't that a wonderful thing? That takes us from that fearful spot and say, God, I'm throwaway. I don't have anything to offer you. And God says, no, I've created you this way. Go and do that. Go do the good works that I have designed for you, you overcomer, you endurer, you doer of good works in my name. What a wonderful thing. God knows who we are, even though we don't sometimes. Second point I would like to just leave you with is God is there every step of the way. Sometimes, what did Gideon say? Why has God forsaken us? I have to admit, in my own life, and maybe at times I heard Mr. Herman say, I know I've been there in a job search as well. There's points you pick a spot where something's difficult. You wonder sometimes, God, how much longer? When? Where are you? Why does this work this way? Don't you know? Don't you see? When are you going to handle this injustice? When is this going to change? What did he do with Gideon? Every step of the way, God addressed him a certain way. God said, I'll wait. Bring your offering back. I'll show you something there. You want the fleece flipped? We'll do that. You're still afraid? Go down and listen to them. Talk to them. I'll be with you. I'll give you victory. I'll give you. Right? That's what God does every step. And it's good to remember that because at those dark times, it's good to say, God, thank you for still being here. I don't feel it maybe as much today, but I know you're there. I know your love. And I know, Father, you are with me. I keep coming back to what the angel said. When God is there, he says, you will have peace. Peace. That's a good barometer. Because sometimes you hear sermons, I do the same way. And I go, oh, yeah, where am I in that faith-fear spectrum? Where's my gauge? You go, yeah, you know what? There's certain times you feel like, oh, maybe I'm here. One way to measure it is, how do you feel in your life? A lot of anxiety? A lot of concern? Or a lot of peace? A lot of courage. You know, if I'm honest with myself, if you say there's peace and I feel I have courage, probably trusting in God a little more, looking a little less to myself, waiting on God, understanding that he is in the middle of the storm with me. That's courage. I think of our young people all the time and the things you have to do. It's hard. It's difficult. It's easy to have anxiety and unrest. It's a much different world. But God says when we're close to him and we recognize he's with us, we have peace and we have courage. A third takeaway I'll leave you with. I mentioned it several times. Growing in faith is a process. Don't be discouraged. Sometimes that needle fluctuates wildly. It can fluctuate. But I think God is merciful too. And for the most part, how he leads us through these levels when he works with us. You saw it with Gideon. He didn't start right away and say, all right, I'm going to burn your offering and let's get down to 300 men and get after the Midianites. Right? It didn't work that way. It doesn't work that way in our life. And I think sometimes people have said, you know, that age-old question, would you rather know what the next 10 or 15 years of your life look like or not? You know, sometimes, oh, yeah, it'd be great to know. Maybe it wouldn't be great to know. Maybe God has to walk us through day by day. If we saw certain things, boy, could we get there today? But God in his mercy steps us and reinforces us and gives us assurances that so we can go when we face that next rung on the video game that we've got to go up against. And I just think of the ultimate, who was called Father of the Faithful, right? Abraham. You talk about test, and then there's test. Talk about final exams. This was the ultimate final exam when he says, you know, I'm going to give you an heir through your son. Now take your son up into this wooded spot and sacrifice him. Right? He had seen big pieces of Abraham before, but then when he drew the knife back, what does God say at that point? Now I know. Now I know who you put your trust in. Now I know where your total allegiance is. What a great hallmark for us to keep shooting for that. So when God puts us in that spot, whether it's at school or work with your family or any situation, God says, I know how they will react. I know where they will put their trust, where they will put their faith. What a great thing we heard from Abraham. That's where God was taking Gideon as well through that process to reveal more of himself. So he could see that and grow to trust and understand him completely. The fourth takeaway I'll give you is, you know, we can't be too small for God to use, but we can be too big. We can't be too small for God to use. That's the story of Gideon. God didn't want some, he didn't say to Gideon, go and get all the Israelites you can scare up, because you know what? They've got 135,000 over here. If we get it, give me at least 100,000, and I can probably get it done. Right, you go and get everything, get that, and come back, and then we'll talk. No, what was the whole thing about? Go back to Judges 7 and verse 2. God doesn't need that from us. He needs something very, very different. He doesn't need us to be big. He needs us to be small. Go to Judges chapter 7 in verse 2. When Gideon had his army assembled, the Lord said to Gideon, "The people who are with you are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hands." Why? Because he says, "Lest Israel claim glory for itself against me, saying, 'My own hand saved me.'" Isn't that so, so human for all of us? We get into a spot, if we could figure it out, we'll figure it out. We'll get there. And you know what? I got into this really tight spot, and I did this, and I did that. Boy, you know, I figured it out. We humanly want to go that direction, right? And God says, it's all to give God the glory. The purpose of this life is for less of us to be involved and have more of him shine through us. More of him, where we say, you know what? God, fill in the blank, was merciful. God delivered. God answered this. I waited on God, and he did. He, right? Less of us. What does God want? I said, God wants us to be small. I'll give you one verse on this, one you know well, but one that's good to keep in mind. Isaiah 66. Isaiah 66. God's not looking for us to save the day. God's got that peace. What he's doing is saying, stay with me. Listen to me. Sometimes I like it at the Columbus Prom. I always enjoy, our daughter was a senior this past year, so you got to think of your favorite scripture, your favorite quote. I always like hearing the young people talk about, to me, I would hate that task because there's so many, every time I go, this would be the one I would use. No, I'd use that one. But it's fun to see what they come up with and their thought process and different things. But I think if you're going to pick one, this one would be right near the top as well. Look what it says in verses 1 and 2. What does God say? He says, "The heaven is my throne and earth is my footstool." I've made it's all mine. It's all, I own it all. Where is the house you will build me? Where is the place of my rest? What are you going to give me that can satisfy me further? It's all my stuff. I don't need that from you. I've created all this. He says that in verse 2, "For all these things my hand has made." Right, you read through Job 38 when God goes through that whole thing about where were you when I created, and you start understanding who God is. There's nothing we give that way. What does he want from us? "All these things exist," says the Lord. "But this is what I want from you. This is what I want from you as you go from fearful to faithful. I want this one while I look on him who is a poor and of a contrite spirit, who's small, and who trembles at my word." That's the fear we want. The fear of God's word, that we understand who we are in relation to God, and we say, "God, I don't know how to direct my steps. I'm going to look to you, I'm going to wait to you, and I want to obey you, and I want to give my allegiance, as hard as it is, to you, 100%. The last thing I'll leave you with, and I didn't spend time on it as we were going through Gideon's story, but Gideon's story is an incredible story, great faith. But after the battle, something happened that left a little bit of a tarnish on Gideon's legacy. Go back to Judges. Go back to Judges, the 8th chapter. Judges 8 and verse 22. "The men of Israel said to Gideon, 'Rule over us.'" Why wouldn't you, right? Here's a successful general in the battle that had just defeated the Midianites. "Both you and your son and your grandson," Gideon said, "I will not rule over you.
nor shall my son, the Lord shall. So he was a great response, and Gideon said to them, I'd like to make a request to you, however. Give me all the earrings from your plunder, the gold earrings that the Ishmaelites wore that. Historically, they had gold earrings. So he said, give me all that gold. And they said, we'll gladly give them to you. And then in verse 26, now the weight of the gold earrings he requested was very, very heavy, 1,700 shekels of gold. We'll take that to be heavy. And in verse 27, he made it into an ephod, which is really like if you remember from Deuteronomy and Leviticus, that was a priestly robe. So he made this very ornate priestly robe. He set up in his city, and all of Israel played the harlot with there, became a snare to Gideon and his house. So it sounds like we don't have all the details, but he wanted some level of people maybe to worship there instead of Jerusalem. So he set this thing up, and it became a snare to his house. So my last and fifth point, I would say, we need to finish strong. Right? From fearful to faithful means when we get to the five-yard line, we've got to figure out how to get across the goal line, how to finish all the way strong. You know, you think of verses in the Bible, or I think of like in Hebrews, you can just jot this down, Hebrews 5 and verse 12, where Paul is saying, at a time where you should be growing and having, you know, meat, you're back to milk. You've gone, you've reverted back, right? But here, Gideon had even gone to a spot where he had set something up contrary to God's system. You know, you want to finish strong. And sometimes we had a situation on a very physical level. We had this huge maple tree in our front yard. It's been sort of a hallmark of the front yard, and we loved it every year. Big yellow flowers, everything. We never, you know, leaves, yellow flowers, maple tree. Sorry about that. It's maple leaves, and every year you just never even know maintenance. Right? You think it's going to finish strong. It looks good on the outside. And this year, it was March, April, May, no buds. And I had a gentleman come out that took another limb down. I had him look at it. He goes, yeah, it's dead. And we finally last week had that pulled out. It didn't finish all the way. It just suddenly trailed off. So I think one of the lessons of Gideon, we see it now. How much are we seeing in this whole unfortunate news situation with the Me Too and so many people now at the end of their lives, so much disappointment and sin and trouble coming out. Right at the finish line. It's an important reminder to us that we want to continue to walk faithful to the finish line. I enjoy reading, in one sense, obituaries, especially the ones that we find in United News, where they talk about so-and-so was just a faithful servant for years and years, and now we look forward to seeing them again in the resurrection. They walked all the way on that path. And what you don't read in there were difficulties. There were things that could have derailed. There were probably temptations. But they walked as a faithful servant. What a wonderful story. What a wonderful legacy. And that's also possible for us. Well, as I started the sermon, I mentioned there's a lot of fears that we might have in life, physical fears. And those things, you know, we can talk about and we can work on. But the big one is what we find in Revelation 21 and verse 8, when God says, those who are fearful, those who are not able to trust me, those who are not able to stand up for me, those who are not able to continue to walk with me through a storm, and when I say, trust me, you mighty person, because I'll win the victory for you. You just have to do this little bit over here. Those are the ones that God says will not be in his kingdom. That's a very sobering statement when I read that. But on the flip side, God makes it very, very possible for all of us to move along that pendulum from that spot. Wherever we might find ourselves, wherever we might be on that, as you sit here this afternoon, wherever your needle is, God can take us all the way to faithful. Because we saw in here, God knows us or thinks of us very, very differently than we think of ourselves. He calls us his sons and daughters. He's with us every step of the way. He's merciful in how he deals with us. And he lets us circle back when our meter goes back and forth. Right, and God can take us to the finish line. So hopefully we will all remember Gideon, remember his life, remember his story, because it's a very, very powerful story, and it's something that God wants from each one of us as we walk this physical life. And I encourage the young people, and it's good to see the progress the young people make as well on this journey, because it is a journey. And it's a journey that is won every day, one day at a time, that God has a vision for us and he wants us to go from that. So we will go from wherever we are in that fearful spectrum to being that faithful servant of God.